You're listening to Sunstein Sunday on Q104.3. Once again, Shelley Sunstein.
Good morning, and as we continue our pre-July 4th Sunstein Sunday, I want to introduce you to Carla Bass, who is a retired Air Force colonel. And the reason she's here is that she has written a book that can actually help you on the job or help those of you who are going for your first jobs, or maybe not even your first job, maybe even your 10th job, because her book is called Right to Influence, and I read this on my way out to L.A., the long flight out to L.A., and I even picked up some tips in terms of writing the best email you can write where people aren't lost in the minutiae or just get bored, period. And I found that, Carla, we have the same philosophy. When it comes to me writing the news and you writing your letters, emails, and resumes, which was basically what you were in charge of in the Air Force, is to be concise, get to the point, get rid of the extra stuff. So first of all, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
And first, a little background on you. How did you become an Air Force colonel?
I decided in seventh grade that I was going to join Air Force intelligence in particular. My father, it was Vietnam War then, so I'm dating myself. My father was in Air Force intelligence, and my mother kept chastising me, don't ask him any questions, he can't tell you what he does. I heard that once too often, decided, well, I'll just join it myself, and I did. So he was active duty for 30 years, retired a colonel. I was active duty 29 years and 10 months, retired a colonel. So I brought the Eagles back to my dad.
But there aren't many women who become colonels.
There were, in my generation, there were very, very few. So I was one of those original glass breakers. For my entire career, I was accustomed to being the only woman in an audience of 150 men. And you did your job. You were an Air Force officer first, and who happened to be a woman. And I loved every second of it.
But it must have been challenging, right?
Well, it was. But when my dad commissioned me, he gave me three pieces of advice that I follow to this day and I often offer to your listeners. One was stay focused on the job. Don't get caught up in office politics. The second was always keep your sense of humor. And the third was always, always take care of your people. And that last piece is actually how I began my own journey with this book.
Huh. And actually, those are three pieces of advice that everybody could use in the workforce.
Yep. It gives balance. It gives context. It keeps you focused. It reminds you that no matter what your job is, whether you're a peer leader or a supervisor, taking care of your friends and your people benefits everybody.
Okay, let's get down to the book now. The book is called Right to Influence. First of all, how could they find your book?
It's on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It's online in both paperback and ebook form. And the way my journey began on this was I was a lieutenant colonel. I was a squadron commander of 480 people. When I took command, it was the most losing unit in the state for quarterly and annual professional awards, because the supervisors of these super talented young people couldn't write winning nomination packages. And because your boss can't write, you are inadvertently being penalized for career progression, for being able to get pay raises, send your kids to college, and so forth. So I took 3 days. I sequestered myself in a beach cabin. I analyzed my writing because I already had learned to write like this. And I asked, okay, Carla, how do you do this and how can you teach others? So I developed a little handbook, taught my guys to write. We began sweeping all of these awards. Other units came and said, can you teach us too? And my little tiny handbook back in 1994 went viral. So I ended up teaching for the next 15 years, wherever I went, whatever assignments I went. I taught that to thousands of people. And that was the core. That's now the core part of part two of Right to Influence. So it's changing people's lives through the power of their own written words.
Let's start with helping college grads who are just now perhaps looking for their first professional job. What can they do on their resume to set themselves apart from the masses?
Okay, three right off the bat, three tips. The first is open with maybe two or three sentences that explain to the employer what is it that you bring to the table? What makes you stand out different? What's your skill set? Very concisely. The next is the verbs. Don't use verbs like contributed to, supported, passive verbs. Developed, implemented, managed, led, hard-hitting verbs, and follow that up with specifics. And the next tip is add details. Led a team of people on a project. Okay, well, how many people on the team led a 9-person team for a 3-month study that developed something or other, made recommendations to the CEO? Okay, how many recommendations? Did he accept them? What happened as a result of him accepting those recommendations? Detail add dimension and contour and depth, and it provides a mental yardstick for the reader to understand that's what you did.
So be specific.
Yep.
Not general. What about somebody who has been in the workforce so long that they can't fit everything on one page, which is what you should do, is mm-hmm. fit everything on one page. I mean, how much time do you have to weed through how many resumes?
Mm-hmm. Two things on that is have a very, very large resume that you use as a reference document for yourself that chronicles all of your accomplishments, but then tailor that particular resume to the job for which you're applying. So if I had once someone applied for a job I was hiring for, and it was kind of an administrative job, he happened to have been an analyst for an adversary country and explained all of his background there, but had no application at all to the job for which he was applying. So extract from your master document those particular items that play to the job that you're hiring, that you're applying for, and look at the keywords in the job announcement and parallel the keywords.
What about emails?
Oh my golly. Okay.
I mean, you could write an entire book just on how to write an email.
The second edition of Right to Influence should be out like any day now, literally this week. There's a chapter in the first edition and it continues in the second edition on email. Two points there is first, everybody is busy. So you put the most important thing, the most important facts in the beginning of the email, and then you follow that up with ancillary information. If there's an action involved that you're trying to say, hey, I need this by such and such date, leverage the subject line, action, colon, and then what you need.
So put that in the subject
line. In the subject line.
Right.
All right. So that right off the bat, it's a bell ringer for the reader to say, okay, I got it. There's something important here. If there's a due date, same thing. So action, due date, and then the ancillary or the backup information.
Don't make them weed through.
Absolutely not. I tell people that every writer is constrained by two things, time and space. You're constrained by the reader's time. Tick, tick, I'm busy, so tell me what you want. Get off the stage. And space, literally the physical space, whether it's in government forms or the space on a web page, every single space is valuable. So important stuff up first and then the backup info.
It's important how it looks to the eye, I found in an email. So is it best to have several little paragraphs?
Yes, the brain and the eyes can easily, they more readily assimilate smaller chunks of information as opposed to a big paragraph. So if I have 3 points for you, I'm emailing you, I have 3 points, number one, and number them, 1, 2, 3. And that helps you understand that I've got 3 items. And if you will slow down and recognize that and give me my 3 answers, because very often people will answer 1 out of 3 questions. They just don't carry through to see the rest of it. But if you either number them or bulletize them so people don't have to go through clunky, cumbersome paragraphs to extract what it is you're trying to convey.
How about the reply all?
Oh,
rules.
Please be judicious on that. The golden rule applies here. If you do not want to be replied all, then stop and pause just a minute. Do you really need to encumber everybody's inbox with this, or can you be selective? And the same thing for the 2 versus the CC. That's very confusing also. So if I'm only infoing you on this, I do not put you on the 2 line because that confuses you. Are you actioned or are you only informationed?
Right. So there's a real big difference. So you CC, if this is just for information, make sure you CC the person, not put it in the to line.
Yep. There is a discriminator. Am I expecting something from you? If so, I put you in the to. If it's just for information, I don't put you in the to because I confuse you.
Also, you make a real big point about spell check.
Don't rely on spell check. You have to do it. You have to do it by yourself because there are so many there, and there. Spell check, grammar check is not going to catch that for you. So I'm speaking now especially to high school and college students and folks new to the workforce. There are some things that you still have to do manually. I advise folks to proofread backwards.
What does that mean?
It means proofread from the bottom of the document up. What happens if you proofread it sequentially as you actually pretending that you're reading it, you can accidentally get caught up in the message that you're trying to convey, and you yourself overlook the mistakes because you start hearing your own message and you don't find the errors. So if you proof it backwards, that way you can't get caught up in the storyline because you're reading it backwards.
How do you know when to send an email and when it is more appropriate to send a text? There's, you know, this is one of those situations where you can tick someone off.
Yep. Okay. I will. This is true confession now. I'm probably the only person in the entire universe who doesn't text. All right. I don't text. My friends know.
Is that because of a military background?
No, it's because I am not IT oriented. I do Facebook and all of this stuff, but I don't text. You can phone call, you can email, you can Facebook, you can LinkedIn. I don't text.
So you wouldn't even know how to make a recommendation.
No, I'm sorry.
All right. So I'm speaking to Carla Bass. She is a retired Air Force colonel, and she has written a book called Right to Influence, which is basically a how-to guide, and it actually has sections where you're tested yourself on how you do with writing an email and catching mistakes and making things concise and getting to the point.
There are 200 exercises in there, and I present them in a before the horrible writing, after how you apply the word sculpting strategies and the techniques and analysis, so you can actually see how it is applying the methods in the book to the before after. You can actually see how the thing transforms itself, how you can actually affect this yourself.
In your job, did you have to give speeches as well?
Yes.
Okay, so I would think if you learn to write concisely, you learn to speak concisely.
Well, and that's true. So there are several prevalent themes here, and they apply to both writing and speaking. The first is you have to know the audience. To whom are you speaking? What are their needs? Empathy is critical when you're trying to communicate with something. What do they speak? What do they know of the subject matter? So you don't talk over their heads, or you don't speak down to them. What do they need, and how can you deliver it? All right.
There's another thing that just popped in my head. Mm-hmm. The acronym, which drives me insane today, that everybody uses an acronym and they assume you know what that means.
Yep.
I get these acronyms in emails and you're sitting there trying to decipher what are they saying. What is the rule for the acronym?
Again, it comes back to knowing the audience. If you are certain that the audience, I don't care if you know the acronym, does the reader know it? If not, spell it out. Now, if you're into writing a document and you're going to use that acronym more than once, the first time you introduce the term, you put the acronym. Thereafter, you use the acronym, and people mess that up very, very often.
And what's the best tip you can give? Because we are losing the art of writing.
We are. The writing fat is prevalent, whether you're in high school or college or even folks in advanced schooling. They're given a writing assignment saying, give me a paper of 1,000 words. And instinctively, everybody thinks a little bit of meat and a lot of fluff, and I can make the 1,000 words. That's completely missing the point. Because when they come out of school, when they're into the workforce, employers need somebody. They're looking for young employees who can write concisely, precisely, because you go back to the every writer is constrained by time and space. This affects the employer's bottom line. You have to be able to communicate with power and effectively. So my guidance or recommendation to students is, yes, you have to write more, because when you do the first draft, you get rid of all those wasted words and you shrink what you've written by about half. But what you have now is powerful. And what you've just bought yourself is more space to continue making your case. That's what it's all about, is making your case. So whether I'm trying to explain hire me because, or defending my budget, or I'm submitting for a grant, the more space that you can save yourself to make your case, the more powerful that your product can be.
And I just thought, you know, if you know a recent grad, this is a great gift for them. Carla Bass's Right to Influence. If you missed any part of this interview, download the iHeartRadio app, which is free. And my podcast is called Sunstein Sessions. And I will not see you tomorrow morning because I'm on vacation. So I'll see you a week from tomorrow, Q104.3.
You've been listening to Sunstein Sunday, a production of New York's classic rock, Q104.3.